2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
Now, I'm sure at this point you've seen the little weird cartoon or doll versions of all your friends on socials, and I'm sure you're wondering what is going on. Is this a fun trend or is it something that is a bit more sinister? Well, for tech's sake, podcaster Elaine Burke knows way more about this than I do, and she's here now to tell me all about it. You're very welcome back to the show, Elaine.
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
I know, it's great to see you in the flesh, because I think you were on the phone the last time that you were here. Yeah. I obviously have got so many questions on this. This kind of took off and did the rounds a couple of weeks ago and it's stayed going, but what is going on with this stuff? Like, what is an AI doll essentially?
Yeah, so it is a image generation trend, yeah. I guess, which has kind of become a bit of a thing. So what happened was OpenAI updated one of its models, its chatbots, so that you could actually prompt it with a bit of text to get an image within the chatbot. Normally you would have to switch to an image generation model to do that.
Okay.
And then the images that it was generating, even in the free version that was available to everyone, were a little bit more sophisticated than previous models. Just a little bit of an upgrade. And people just started having fun with that and doing things that other people cottoned on to and then started replicating. So sometimes people were Ghiblifying their images, so basically making it look like an image from Studio Ghibli, which is the studio behind My Neighbor Totoro, Spirited Away. It has a very distinct Japanese animation style, hand-drawn style, I should say.
Mad.
Certainly not AI generated.
No.
And people also did things where they'd put in pictures of their animals or pets and ask them to be turned into people. Yeah.
It's just terrifying.
And I mean, essentially, like, it's not hugely creative. You know, you'd have a ginger cat would be a ginger person. You know, it's like, I don't know. And even the AI dolls, that was just another of these trends. Someone made like a doll version of themselves.
Yeah.
So say if it was you, Laura, they'd probably be in a package that was labeled like 2FM, the Laura Fox Show, and have accessories like a microphone and maybe a smartphone or something like that. Just to, like, the kind of packaging that you get with a collectible doll. They'll get a specific outfit that's kind of trying to express who they are and what's their personality and these accessories. And again, like, some are better than others. Some come out looking like a packaged doll, and that depends on really how good your prompt is. And some just kind of come out looking like a dollified drawing that's in packaging, but like it doesn't look like any doll you've ever seen. Like, the knees are knobbly and the pose is wrong. And
you have such issues with these, I can see. But like, looks okay. So the AI dolls came from a ChatGPT release. Like, do we know why they released this technology? Is it just for shits and giggles?
Well, there's an element of that. So this was great for OpenAI, basically, because people were using their engine then to make these things. Now, other image generation engines would make similar images for you.
Okay.
But what was happening was that because these trends coincided with that new release, that a lot of people were turning to ChatGPT, which has a free version that had the sophisticated new image model in it, to do this. And that gets them lots of new users signed up to use it, and gets them lots of text testing of their brand new model that's just been released. So we can kind of start to see ourselves as the beta testers for these products. Like, we're doing free quality assurance.
I was just going to say, we're doing it all for free.
Yeah. Whenever a product is free, you're probably doing some work for it, essentially. And that's what they need with these models. They do need vast amounts of user testing. So if you can get millions of people to jump on a trend, you'll get that user testing. And on the other side of it, something that really bothered me about this release was that when they released this model, they also kind of diluted a lot of the safeguards that they would have had on other image generation models, where they wouldn't depict certain violent scenes or replicate images of known people.
Okay.
Because you can create very harmful images and even misinformation and disinformation when those safeguards are removed. They were removed with this model, and OpenAI said that was in the realm of trying to give people creative freedom. And they said that that would lead to maybe some offensive images being created, and that's just like something that people were going to have to deal with, I guess. And it did lead to some very strange things. Like, immediately people were taking some of the most violent images from history and turning them into Studio Ghibli frames. And even the White House's own X account made some very strange approaches to this, where they Ghiblified an image of a woman being arrested by ICE and crying her heart out. Really strange thing to turn into like cutesy Japanese animation style. But this was the real White House account.
The real White House account has Like so, yeah. Like so many times I've looked at things over the last couple of weeks, I've
and
kind
thought
of
it was a parody.
100%. There's no way that I actually thought that I'd be looking at Donald Trump with big muscles, but here we are. It's just it's going in a different direction altogether. Can we stick on Studio Ghibli for a second, because you've mentioned that a couple of times. Why should people maybe not rush out and use the Ghibli AI? Is there like some copyright issues there, or is there anything they're up against?
So I've spoken to actual like legal experts about the copyright issues around AI, because currently there are a number of cases going on against a lot of the model makers about how they have gotten the data to produce the images that they make. So how is it that you can go to one of these models, and it's not just the OpenAI model that can do this, and say, I would like a Studio Ghibli type image, and it can produce that. Now, there are images online that are part of, say, news reports, announcements of the various films that have come out over the years that have that style to them. And there are people who have a very, very good critical eye who'll notice that an AI-generated Ghibli isn't quite as good as what you'd expect from a Ghibli. So there's an argument that they just use freely available images that are online to give the model a sense of what is a Ghibli image. Yeah. But, you know, they could also have included frames from the films if they were pirated and stuff like that. I'm not saying they did that. That's just something that is possible to have done, to have fed into a model. And that's the stuff that's kind of been hashed out in the courts, is whether any copyrighted material ended up in these models, and if this use of it constitutes what's called fair use in the US. In the EU, it's a slightly different language. But most of these are being contested in the States at the moment. And I suppose, like, anyone who's an end user, so us just, you know, on our computers making our fun little images, you're not likely to see any downstream effects of that. Like, Studio Ghibli or any of the other copyright holders are probably not going to come after every individual who just made a Ghibli image of their corgi, you know. But if you're a business user, you might want to think twice about it, because there's also a sense of reputational damage here as well. There's a lot of criticism coming at brands that are turning to generative AI for something that could have been done by a paid artist. So examples where there was, I think it was a Fingal County Council market was being held, and people spotted that, you know, the cartoons in the image had like not the right amount of fingers and had some artifacts that looked like generative AI. Okay. And that would be the kind of work, you know, a local council could have given to a local artist. And that's where criticism usually comes to bear. It's when you kind of would expect better of a brand.
Yeah, I totally get that. Also, I love the amount of times you've said Ghibli in the last like 4 minutes. So what are OpenAI critics alleging is the real reason for releasing all this stuff into the public? Is it literally just for, like we said, kind of because they can?
I think, yeah, like there's definitely an element of they need to keep themselves popular. They need to see their user growth keep going up. They had a massive amount of users sign up really, really quickly when ChatGPT first came on the scene. It was one of the first applications to ever to hit 100 million users as quick as it did. And then very soon after that, Threads, when Meta released its Twitter copy, essentially Threads, that took the crown away from ChatGPT. But these businesses, they rely entirely at the moment on outside investment kind of funding what they're doing, and they're very expensive to run businesses as well. And OpenAI has been very successful at securing that investment. They've secured hundreds of billions in investment. But that's all, like, part of that investment is into the hype around their business, you know, because at the moment they are a business that spends more than they are making, a lot more. Like, an estimate before these new generative models came along was that they'd spend $2 to make one. It's probably sending more at this point. And that's not really a sustainable business. But if you are racking up massive user growth and a lot of popularity and virality, there's something worth investing in there. And like, it's an interesting thing that happens in tech. It doesn't seem like good business at all. I mean, Uber was 10 years in business before it ever made a profit. And it's still not quite, I don't think, met the disruptive idea that it was set out to do. You know, it was meant to completely disrupt transport. But it's in Ireland especially, it's not very popular here. Taxis are still on the roads. It really depends on where you are on how successful you'd rate Uber as. And there's a possibility that the same thing could happen now with these AI companies, that like they will hoover up a lot of investment money, spend very quickly on data centers and processing power and all the things that it takes to generate all of this stuff. But until they actually find something that's worth paying for, they are really kind of in a halfpenny place there, and they might be there for a long time.
So essentially what you're saying is they have to stay releasing little bits like this to us to keep everybody invested and coming back onto, you know, OpenAI and ChatGPT and like all these different sites so that they can stay justifying the funding by being like, well, we're getting more sign-ups all the time and eventually people will be hooked and they'll pay a little bit
and
more.
And look at the response to our new model. People love it. But it's kind of like if you look, if you just scratch beyond the surface a little bit, it's like people love it, but what they're using it for is for a trend. Like, I mean, I haven't seen an AI doll in my feed for a while now and they were everywhere for a moment. Like, they need to do something more than just capture a moment of inspiration. They need to have something that has long-term buyer attraction.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite there
yet. It wasn't just the like the anime or the dolls. Like, you know, you had the Simpsons where you could turn someone into a Simpson character. You had the high school yearbook filters. They were on the go too. Have you tried many of them?
I haven't really, because I'm a little bit conscious of the energy usage. So let's get into that, because I know that
well,
came
massively,
up a lot
with
the AI doll trend. And I thought that was really interesting, actually, because that's happening faster as well. The criticism of these trends is coming fast, as well as the rise and fall of the trend itself. And I think that that's a really healthy dialogue that's happening at the moment, where people are getting a bit more energy conscious around these AI models. Now, I would say, broaden that out. Everything that you do in terms of your technology usage has got a carbon footprint and an energy usage. And there's a really fantastic book called How Bad Are Bananas by Mike Berners-Lee. And if that name is familiar, it's because his brother is Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the internet.
Oh.
But he is himself a researcher of carbon footprints.
Okay.
And he documented, and there's a revised version from 2020, the carbon footprint of pretty much everything.
Okay.
And it's in this book. And he like documented the carbon footprint of email, the carbon footprint of the world's ICT. And they are very different. So the world's ICT is up there with the likes of deforestation and war. And that's information communications technology, if you're not familiar with that term. So that's how much energy and carbon footprint and environmental costs is going into kind of all of the digital activities, all of the everything, you know, every transaction, everything that we do online. And you have to kind of consider at what cost, so to what benefit is that cost coming from? And if it's just to generate a few images for fun, I'm a bit iffy about that. It's kind of like we should probably start thinking of digital usage the way we've come to start thinking about food and food waste. People are a lot more conscious now about throwing out food, because, you know, you've basically, there's a carbon footprint in that batch of bread, and if you're throwing out half of it, you've just wasted something that had a huge impact. And you know, one batch of bread, not a huge impact, but you know, the world's bread production would have, and we were all a bit more responsible in our food waste, everything would, you know, change in that respect. It's the same with your digital technologies, and that's the kind of like attitude that I've had for a few years now. And I think it's actually really healthy that that discussion is now being had about technology, that it has an energy footprint. It's not just generative AI, it's everything that you do online. And if people are using things passively, without intention, kind of, I don't want to say irresponsible, because if you got a kick out of it and if a major day, that's also a good thing. But if it is just to generate things over and over and over again, and, you know, it's taken many minutes to generate that image, all those minutes are, you know, racks on a server heating up and having to be cooled down and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, go back to the top of it. It was a question of how I use these things. I try to be very intentional in my use.
And so you're not just jumping on and just using, you know, creating a doll for the sake of it because everyone else is creating it. If it's any consolation, you live in my head rent free when it comes to these things, because I cannot tell you how much I wanted to change my dog into a person. And I was like, no. Elaine Brecker said it's not worth it.
Oh, but if it made you happy.
No, do you know what? It makes me happy just him being a dog. Yeah. I'm quite all right with that. What do you reckon? So, like, will we ever learn? Will we all just jump on the next free trend? Like, you know, like, is this all we're going to be doing all the time? Is just like, vroom, vroom, vroom. It's nothing new.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Like, I think like a lot of the viral trends are essentially because of social media. So because you see something, you kind of want to have a go at it as well. And we see things that people are doing because of social media. And what's interesting there is what's happening in the world of social media at the moment is that it's fragmenting way more than it used to be. It used to be, you know, solely these monoliths. You know, you had everyone was on Facebook, and then everyone, well, a certain subset of people were then on Twitter. And there was maybe like three networks that people were spread between, but now it's more and more fragmented. People are being more selective. People are also entering into closed groups more often. Now they can also start trends. You know, a WhatsApp group can start a trend because you'll see the forwarded many times. Yeah, version of that. And that's like the closed group version of trends, but they probably travel a little bit slower than these open social media trends. So how social media evolves will have a huge impact on how we jump on these trends. I don't think they're going to go away, but I definitely see people be a lot more conscious and a lot more skeptical and critical about these things when they arise, and I think that's kind of cool.
And guess what, you'll be here to discuss it all over again at some point. Elaine Burke, as always, thank you so much for coming in. I might really rethink about making a Barbie version of myself after all. That was Elaine Burke from For Tech's Sake podcast. We'll be right back after these.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
podcast,
sponsored by Maxall. From kids lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.